From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm U.S. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's job again appears to be in jeopardy following new reports. President Trump wants to replace him with Central Intelligence Agency Director Mike Pompeo in the coming weeks. Several news publications citing senior White House officials who declined to be identified reported the relationship between Mr. Trump and Tillerson has become strained over the past year. U.S. State Department correspondent Cindy Sain on who might replace Pompeo at CIA.
The word there is that it would be Republican Senator Tom Cotton, who has been a leading figure pushing for a more hawkish position on Iran in particular. He was a staunch opponent to the Iran nuclear deal. So I think he would be take a much harder line on issues such as Iran.
VOA's Cindy Sain at the State Department. Trump administration, after calling for all countries to cut ties with North Korea following the latest ballistic missile test on Wednesday, has stopped short of advocating a regime change in Pyongyang. Earlier, U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley spoke at the UN.
We need China to do more. President Trump called Chinese President Xi this morning and told him that we have come to the point that China must cut off the oil from North Korea. That would be a pivotal step in the world's effort to stop this international pariah.
Haley warned North Korea's missile launch brings the world closer to war. Germany is withdrawing a third diplomat from North Korea, but they say they are not cutting diplomatic ties. This is VOA News. More than 400 U.S. Marines who helped recapture the Syrian city of Raqqa from the Islamic State are leaving the country now. The Marines and their artillery were deployed to Syria in March, joining an alliance of Kurdish, Arab troops, and the Syrian Democratic Forces. It is not clear how many U.S. troops will be remaining in Syria. Meantime, a senior U.N. official is warning many of the hundreds of critically wounded and ill people trapped in the besieged Syrian area of East Ghouta, a suburb of the capital Damascus, could die without urgent medical treatment. That story now from Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
Special advisor to the UN Special Envoy for Syria, Jan Egeland, says the United Nations has been waiting for 2 months for the Syrian government to give the green light to an emergency medical evacuation from East Ghouta. Over that time, he says the list of serious cases requiring urgent treatment has grown to 500.
Not a single of these that we have been able to evacuate over those 2 months. Not a single one.
About 440,000 civilians are trapped in East Ghouta, which has been under siege by the government of Bashar al-Assad since 2013. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Afghan Taliban claiming the deputy head of the Islamic State terrorist group in Afghanistan has joined the Taliban. VOA was unable to independently verify the authenticity of the Taliban claim. Taliban statement came amid increasing rivalry and clashes between Taliban and the Islamic State group in Afghanistan. Pope Francis has called for decisive measures to resolve the political crisis causing mostly Rohingya Muslim refugees from neighboring Myanmar to flee to Bangladesh.
Nessuno di noi può mancare di essere consapevole.
Speaking alongside Bangladesh's president, the Pope said people cannot fail to be aware of the gravity of the situation, the immense toll of human suffering involved. He said a majority of those affected are women and children who are crowded into refugee camps. The exodus of hundreds of thousands of Rohingyas from Rakhine State to the southern tip of Bangladesh is sparked by a military crackdown in response to Rohingya militant attacks on an army base and police post on August 25th. The United Nations and the United States have referred to the Myanmar military's response as ethnic cleansing. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com, and we're always available on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, the first day of December, and here are some of the stories we are covering. New Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has named his cabinet.
I didn't expect it, and when I heard the news, I really felt humbled and honored by His Excellency that I should be afforded an opportunity to serve my country in the capacity of Minister of Justice.
Ziyambi Ziyambi is Zimbabwe's new Minister of Justice. Reporter Blessing Zulu of our VOA Zimbabwe service will join us this morning with some analysis. Zambia's main opposition party says it will defeat President Edgar Lungu in the 2021 general election. And leaders of DRC opposition coalition say they were beaten and arrested during yesterday's protest.
We were arrested just 300 meters when we launched the march, and then they started beating us, we as a leader and some members.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. And there is an outrage in Gambia over the expulsion of a female high school student for inappropriate dancing. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, late Thursday night named a 22-member cabinet that included some of the military people who played a leading role in toppling President Robert Mugabe. No member of the opposition to former President Mugabe was chosen. Former Finance Minister Patrick Chinamaza was brought back, hopefully, to help President Mnangagwa fulfill his promise to revive Zimbabwe's crumbling economy. Ziyambi Ziyambi is the new Minister of Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs, a ministry that in the past was used to target then-President Robert Mugabe's critics. Ziyambi, who was deputy in the Justice Ministry under Mugabe, says he believes all Zimbabweans are equal under the law and will not tolerate selective justice.
I didn't expect it, and when I heard the news, I really felt humbled and honored by His Excellency that I should be afforded an opportunity to serve my country in the capacity of Minister of Justice.
For starters, Honorable Ziyambi is not a stranger to the Minister of Justice, right?
Yes, I'm not a stranger. In fact, Blessing, I want to say that in Parliament, I was a few minutes ago the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs. And this Portfolio Committee's main task is to have oversight on the Justice Ministry. So for the past 2 years and a half, I've been playing that oversight role on the Ministry of Justice. Then under the now President of the Republic of Zimbabwe, he was our Minister of Justice, and we interacted very well. I gave him a hard time at times when I wanted the ministry to do things in a certain way, and I'm no stranger. I've been working with the Ministry of Justice for quite some time.
This ministry is key as Zimbabwe is in transition. Many people tend to say, oh, sometimes it can be a bit political, and there is a tendency by those in the ruling party to target individuals that they might not agree with. How are you going to approach your new responsibility to ensure that, we don't hear cases of the selective application of the law?
My approach, which I've always upheld, is every individual is equal before the law. Selective application of the law, I won't tolerate that. So what I advocate is people should be treated as people, and their cases should be treated according to the facts that are there. And I hope that our system will follow that and not have this practice of selective application of justice.
Ziyambi Ziyambi is the new Zimbabwe Minister of Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs. He spoke with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. Joining us now in the studio for analysis of President Emmerson Mnangagwa's new cabinet is reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe service. Good morning to you, Blessing, and welcome once again to Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much.
Well, what can you tell us about this new cabinet?
The cabinet announced last night by the new president of Zimbabwe, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is a quite interesting cabinet. The Zimbabwe president had promised the nation that he was going to come up with a lean cabinet because he was saying that Mr. Mugabe's cabinet was bloated, so he was going to reduce the number of ministers. But sadly, some political analysts are saying he has not done that. He has appointed 21 cabinet ministers plus deputies and ministers of state. So essentially, it remains a cabinet that is bloated.
I'm looking at the list and I see some names here of these military people who helped to remove President Mugabe. Is this a militarized cabinet?
Indeed. You know, this has come as a surprise to many because remember when the army moved in to put Mr. Mugabe under house arrest, they were saying that they only wanted to remove malcontents around him. But we know what later happened. Mr. Mugabe stepped down, and we thought the army was going to the barracks. But apparently, no. The guy who announced the coup on national television, Major General Sibusiso Sibanda, is now, interestingly, the Minister of Foreign Affairs. And you also have the commander of the Zimbabwe Air Force, Air Marshal Perence Shiri, is now the Minister of Agriculture. You also have Ambassador Christopher Muchangwa, chairperson of the War Veterans, coming in as the Minister of Information. These are the people who were instrumental in ensuring that the military did intervene and force Mr. Mugabe to step down.
Along those lines, I'm looking at the list here, and it seems to me some of the ministers I'm seeing here were once in Mugabe's government. So how different is this government under Mnangagwa?
Indeed, that has also shocked many Zimbabweans because they thought that Mr. Mnangagwa maybe was going to form an inclusive government, bring in some opposition members. He would at least try to bring in the technocrats. Remember, Zimbabwe's unemployment is estimated to be around 90%. The country does not have a strong currency. They are using what they are calling a bond note. The economy is not performing very well. One would think he would bring in people who would tackle that. But unfortunately, it's more of the same. These are the ministers that some of them were there since the 80s and they still remain ministers. So it appears that he was simply rewarding those in his faction.
As you said, the cabinet was just announced last night. What do you think the people of Zimbabwe will say when they wake up and they are hearing these names?
I think many will be shocked. I was just reading comments on Facebook, you know, even those known to be very loyal to Mr. Mnangagwa are also questioning this cabinet because they thought that this was going to be a departure from the Robert Mugabe era. But it appears this is not the case.
Blessing, thank you very much again. Always nice to have your insight on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much. The pleasure is mine.
That's reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service speaking with us this morning in our Washington studio. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, the first day of December. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. Zambia's main opposition party, the United Party for National Development, UPND, says it is not afraid to compete against and defeat President Edgar Lungu in the 2021 general election. However, the party says the president is not qualified to contest in the elections. The UPND is challenging the eligibility of the president in court, contending that he would have served the two terms allowed by the Constitution. The party's remark came after President Lungu said in an interview with the Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation that some people are scared to face him in the next general election. Charles Kakoma, spokesman for the UPND, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the UPND believes President Lungu would contravene the Constitution if he stands as a candidate for the ruling Patriotic Front Party in the 2021 general election.
Well, the opposition is not scared of President Lungu. He has no popularity. The popularity has plummeted so much that in the last 1 year that he became president. Independent researchers like from the National Democracy Institute of America
have said that 60% of the people that voted for him this time around, if he stood again, would not vote for him. The reason why we think he will lose is that there's so much loss of confidence in his leadership because of corruption, because of high unemployment levels, because of poverty and poor governance. And the only reason we are saying he must not stand again in 2021 is that that will send a bad precedent in future, because it will be a violation of the Constitution.
But Charles, isn't it the reason why the court are handling the issue of the constitutionality, whether he is qualified to stand in 2021 or not? He said he will respect the decision of the court, but he still remains confident that he's qualified to run in 2021.
Well, in fact, it's us as UPND that he took the matter to court, that he's not qualified to stand in 2021. And we are hoping that the court will rule in our favor. But you are saying that, in fact, if he stood again in 2021, he would be the easiest candidate to beat as a ruling party candidate because he's so unpopular. But even if he's the easiest candidate, we do not want him to stand because that would be a violation of the Constitution.
Well, some are saying that the opposition is afraid of him because he's popular. That is why the opposition, UPND, took this matter to court when it's years away from the day that election will be conducted in the country. So why start the fight now when you know this can be fought at least 3 years from now?
It is, in fact, him who started the whole issue of the 2021 elections. People are saying that why is he concentrating on the 2021 elections when he should be concentrating on governing the country? He must deliver on his promises rather than campaigning for 2021 when he's just a few months in office from the previous election.
So they said the reason why the opposition is afraid is because he is doing so well and the opposition is scared, and that is why they have resorted to the court to prevent him from running in 2021.
There are people that are misleading him because they want to eat with the system. They want to eat with him. Similar like what was happening in Zimbabwe, where people thought Robert Mugabe was very popular until the uprising. So he must not listen to those people that are telling him that he's very popular. On the ground, the situation has changed. In fact, even the last election, according to UPND, he did not win. And that's why we took the matter to court, because he never won.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Leaders of the main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the Rassemblement, say they and members of the party were beaten and arrested during Thursday's protest against President Joseph Kabila. Those arrested were later released. The opposition has been protesting to force President Kabila to step down before the end of the year. The protesters have been warned by the authorities not to protest for fear of violence. Martin Fayulu is a member of the Rassemblement.
I was arrested with the Secretary General of UDPS, Mr. Jamal Kabund. We were arrested just 300 meters when we launched the march, and policemen came and tried to stop us. And then they started beating us. We as a leader and some members, they have arrested some members and they continue to beat us. And at the end, they took us to their police station. And we spent almost 3 hours over there. And then 3 hours later, they told them that to release us.
The protest for Thursday was called by Mr. Felix Tshisekedi, your leader. Was he able to come to the protest?
The protest was called by the Rassemblement. And Felix Tshisekedi is the president of the Rassemblement. We organized that protest as one of the activities we'll conduct at the end of this year to push Mr. Kabila out. Felix Tshisekedi, he couldn't come with us because he was surrounded by policemen at home.
The Director General of the police said that your protest was in violation of a prohibition, meaning the police told you not to get in the streets or not to protest, but yet you violated that.
We didn't violate the law at all because we wrote as the law said. You have to write to the authority, and the authority has to give you the response 70 hours later. But we wrote on November 21st, and the authority responded on November 28th. This is more than 70 hours. And then we considered that it was accepted and there was nothing else to do. But on Wednesday, the governor of Kinshasa called me around 1 a.m. and he told me that, okay, we can have a meeting to agree on the itinerary. What we did, we went to his office, and then at the beginning, it was almost that we are agreeing for the event. But at the end, he denied everything. And then we did so. We told him, okay, verbally, this isn't this. And then he agreed. When he came to write and to give him the paper, he said, no, he have to respond to us in 70 hours, as the law said. We said that, okay, first of all, you breached the law, and we cannot accept to wait until 70 hours anymore.
Mr. Fayulu, the protest was called as part of your effort to pressure President Kabila to step down. The Catholic bishops this week said that they were asking President Kabila to promise that he will not run for another term. Suppose the president says that he's not going to run again. Would that satisfy you, the Rassemblement?
But there is no way that Mr. Kabila can run again. The bishop are saying that for the purpose of releasing the tension. But for us, there is any way that Mr. Kabila can come again and say that I want to contest, because in the December 31st agreement, it's written clearly that Mr. Kabila's second and last mandate ended on December 19, 2017.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the DRC known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa, in the Gambia. There is a national outrage over the expulsion of a female high school student for engaging in what authorities are calling inappropriate dancing with a male student. Human rights activists have condemned the expulsion, saying it violates the girl's right to education. Pandere Umbai reports.
The girl's expulsion from school has attracted a national outrage in the Gambia. Gambians both at home and abroad took to social media discussing the societal and educational ramifications associated with the school's decision. The young girl was caught on videotape engaging in what the school authorities perceive as an inappropriate dancing act with a male student partner. The video appeared on Facebook and it immediately went viral. Pa Samba Jau is a Gambian human rights activist based in Washington, D.C.
Well, I really feel sorry that this young girl was expelled from school. And this has been the case for a very long time, and we really have to revisit. Because in all this, from the video that I saw, there were two people dancing. There was a boy and a girl. Why is it that every time issues like this happen, it is the girl who suffers the most? And I believe the student did wrong. But I believe the heavy-handed approach by the school does not help the situation.
The Gambia High School is one of the oldest schools in the Gambia. Human rights activist Pa Samba Jau believes that the punishment meted out to the female student was outrageous.
I think it is important for our country to start guiding the misguided and not trying to feel that everybody must or has to live through these high moral standards. We have a country. We just came away from a situation where the imams, who are supposed to be the people of high morals, sold their soul to a dictator for the mighty dollar. And yet you want to expect these young girls and young boys to live like these self-righteous or righteous people.
Dr. Ismaila Cisse is a political science professor at the University of the Gambia. He tells VOA that the student's conduct was out of line.
I myself watched the video and I was shocked at the level of vulgarity of their actions at that age. Also, we are in school uniform. It really didn't tell very well with the school. We have to understand the history of the school. Gambia High is a very good school. In fact, most of our leaders are a product of Gambia High. So that video really kind of tarnished and tainted the very reputation of that school.
Notwithstanding, Dr. Cisse says expelling the girl was not the best remedial action. The student body at the Gambia High School convened a meeting after the video went viral. The student body said it will not allow any conduct that might bring disrepute to the school.
We are going to raise our hands up. We produce many good people. Do you know that? We produce presidents, ministers, vice presidents. Everything we produce, garbage in the school is wonderful.
Political analysts said the girl's expulsion violates Section 30 of the Gambian Constitution. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Panderimbay reporting.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the draws for the 2018 Russia World Cup, scheduled to take place later tonight. Africa's five representatives at the World Cup, Nigeria, Tunisia, Morocco, Senegal, and Egypt, will know their group stage opponents for the World Cup when the draws are completed in Moscow. Former Nigerian World Cup stars Kanu Nwankwo, Austin JJ Okocha, including Pelé, Emilio Butragueno, Didier Drogba, Samuel Eto'o, Ronaldo, Peter Schmeichel, and Lothar Matthäus are among 35 FIFA legends that have been invited to attend the 2018 World Cup draw in Moscow. Staying with the World Cup, United States, Mexico, and Canada have submitted a joint bid to host the 2026 World Cup and will face competition from Morocco to stage the tournament. That competition will be the first to include 48 teams rather than the 32 who will compete in Russia next year and in Qatar in 2022. The next stage of the process is the submission of the candidacy dossiers on March 16th next year before the final decision is made by FIFA on June the 13th. And ahead of the Russia World Cup in June 2018, an updated list of banned drugs, substances, and methods in sports, inclusive of football, has been released by the World Anti-Doping Agency to FIFA for its 211 member associations. In a detailed circular from FIFA Secretary General Fatma Samoura, she has advised all member associations of FIFA to spread the message to all football stakeholders in their respective countries. And now to volleyball. The draws for the 24 teams set to participate in the first round of the FIVB Volleyball Men's World Championship, Italy-Bulgaria 2018, has been made. Egypt has been grouped alongside Olympic champions Brazil, Canada, and France. In Pool C, Cameroon, one of the other three Africa's representatives, will meet USA, Russia, Serbia, Australia, and fellow African team Tunisia. The top four teams in each group will move to the second round with the two groups of eight teams. The top three ranked teams in each group in the second round will now qualify for the third round before four teams qualify for the semifinals and then the final. And now to rugby news. The men's World Rugby Sevens series starts in Dubai later today, with holders South Africa looking to get their hands on the trophy again. With the prospect of the Rugby World Cup Sevens 2018 in July in San Francisco looming large, South Africa entered Dubai as clear favourites, having won the 2016-2017 series in convincing style. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, December 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. Oh, also join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.